Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to the 39th episode of Vahini Satsang. We are in the 13th chapter of Prema Vahini, and like in the last three episodes of this program, today too, by Bhagwan's grace, we have with us Professor Venkatraman. We also have Brother Aman Jhaveri, a research scholar from the Department of Management Studies, Prashanthi Nilayam campus of Bhagwan's University. And we are going to discuss today the last segment of the 13th chapter of Prema Vahini, and this is all about education and character development, which Professor Venkatraman is very passionate about. In the previous segment, Bhagwan talked about how ancient knowledge and wisdom of India is being neglected by the current generation, and for two successive weeks, Professor Venkatraman shared how it all boils down to we doing our duty well. And he explained the five forms of duty and the three aspects of it in great detail. So if you have missed the previous episodes, you can anytime download from our website and listen at your convenience. And of course, do send us your feedback. So with prayers at his lotus feet, let's begin this session where we will discuss the last few paragraphs of chapter 13 of Prema Vahini. So let's now listen to what Bhagwan has written in the last part of the 13th chapter.
ఇక మీరు అభ్యసించినదేమి? ఇక మీకు సుఖం ఎప్పుడు? సృష్టి మర్మము తెలుసుకొనుటెప్పుడు? శాశ్వత సుఖమొక్కటే కాని రెండూ లేవు. దానిపైననే దృష్టి పెట్టుడు. ఉపనిషద్ విద్యలను అభ్యసించుడు. కష్ట సుఖాలలో ఉన్నను జీవితాధార విద్యలను అభ్యసించుచుండినను దృష్టి మాత్రం బ్రహ్మపైనుంచుడు. సుగుణముల అభివృద్ధిని తర్ఫీదు చేయక తెలివి మాత్రం అభివృద్ధి చేయు నేటి విద్యలు లోక కళ్యాణమునకే హానికరం. ఇట్టి సద్గుణములపై నేటి బాలులకు బిగువు లేకుండుటకు ప్రస్తుత విద్యా విధానమున ఆధ్యాత్మిక సద్బోధనలు లేకుండుటే కారణం. బాలురు కాని బాలికలు కాని స్త్రీలు కాని పురుషులు కాని పవిత్రమైన బలమైన అందమైన శీలమును పాడుచేయని విద్యనే అలవర్చుకునవలెను. అట్టి విద్యయే విద్య కాని ఎక్కడెక్కడో ఉన్న అన్ని రకాల సంగతులను తీసుకుని వచ్చి విద్యార్థుల బుర్రలలో చేర్చుకునట కాదు. మానవులలో ఉండు ప్రత్యేక గుణ విశేషములకు పరిపూర్ణ వికాసం కలిగించు పద్ధతియే ఆధ్యాత్మిక విద్య.
వాట్ విల్ కన్ఫర్ పీస్ అండ్ వెల్ బీయింగ్ ఫర్ మ్యాన్ కైండ్ ఈస్ ద మెసేజ్ ఆఫ్ ద సేజెస్ అండ్ సీయర్స్, నాట్ ఎనీథింగ్ ఎల్స్. Even as one picks up various knowledge and skills to earn one's livelihood and goes through the vicissitudes of life, one's vision must be focused on the Lord. Permanent happiness is one, not two, and can be secured through the study of the Upanishads. The present education that seeks to improve one's intelligence but not the growth of virtues is detrimental for the welfare of mankind. If the children of today do not take to cultivating virtues, it is because the current educational system is bereft of spiritual instruction. Be it men, women or children, all must strive to imbibe that knowledge which will contribute to a strong, beautiful and virtuous character. This alone is knowledge, not all and sundry information gathered from all sources and crammed into the heads of the students. Spiritual knowledge is that methodology which enables the complete blossoming of the unique qualities inherent in man.
Of course, as I listen to what Bhagwan has written, there are a couple of questions in my mind, but I would first want Aman to ask or comment on it, because you have just returned from your vacations and you have seen the world, had a little bit taste of the how the world is outside. And here one of the things that Swami mentions is, as you go through the vicissitudes of life, you have to remain focused on God. That is something that on which I would also want Professor Venkatraman to dwell on. But first, what are your comments and anything that you would want more clarifications on what Bhagavan has written?
Well, I think something that comes, somehow gets built into students in Swami's institution. You know, I'm just reminded of one incident that happened a couple of years back. It will just, maybe it's a small example of how virtues get built into Swami students. I had gone to one of the organizations to collect my PhD data, and the chairman of that company didn't know about Swami. And when he came to know that I am from Satya Sai University, he asked me, "Oh, who's is this the same Sai Baba who gives chains and rings to people?"
Oh.
So I was a little surprised, but nevertheless I told him, "Yes, of course, but it's not about chains and rings, it's much more." So he spent the next 3 days, and every day he used to call me to his office, and he used to spend a lot of time with me, and he used to ask me about Swami, about Prashanthi Nilayam, about our college, etc., etc. So on the third day, what happened was, one day before I was supposed to leave, he said, "Can you speak about Sai Baba to my people?"
Oh, wow.
And I was a little surprised, and I told him, "Sir, what if they don't appreciate Baba's philosophy?" And he said, "If they don't appreciate Swami's philosophy, then they don't have a place in my organization."
Oh my.
I was quite surprised, because I felt that he has got more conviction in Swami than I had. But the interesting part was, I did get a chance to speak about Swami, and I shared a little bit whatever I've learned at Swami's lotus feet. After the talk was over, and he invited me home for dinner, he asked me, "What is your fees for the talk that you have given?" So I was quite surprised, and I told him, "Sir, fees for what?" And he said, "See, every other Saturday we have these sessions on leadership, and whoever comes, I pay them money. And typically I would pay anything between 50,000 to 1 lakh rupees for one talk. So you can tell me what your fees is."
Which is the company?
So I told him, "Sir, actually I have never thought about money. And whatever I have shared today is given to me free of cost. Why would I even think of charging money for this? I mean, it was such an alien concept for me." He got so surprised, he called his wife. And he said, see this boy, he has given a 2-hour talk, question answers, and he's not even asking money." And then he told me, "Are you really serious? Or look, I'm already impressed with you, so you don't need to do all this to, you know, create further impression." And then I told him, "No, sir, I'm very serious. Whatever I shared with you is what is passed on from generations in our Indian culture and society. It's from the sages, and it's from my teacher, my guru, and I will never even think of asking money." And when this incident happened, I came back and I was sharing with some of my colleagues here that some of the things that we take for granted in Swami's institution because of the upbringing that we have had, it is so alien to people outside.
Yes.
And I just felt at that time that all the virtues and everything that we talk about, you know, somehow they get built into us. I don't know how it happens. I mean, if I would have figured it out, it would have been great. But I really am very surprised. And then such things happen several times. So, yes, that's true. Being born and bred in Swami's institution, in Swami's environment, it does build in a lot of things in us, which I think we would probably never get anywhere in the whole universe.
Wow. Fantastic. Well, you know, sometime back I was talking to some youngsters, and this youngster, actually it was a Skype call from the US, and so this teenager, she said that, you know, we learn a lot of things in the Balvikas, in the SSB classes, and so when we are in that kind of an environment, you know, it is okay, we practice all that at home, and you know, if you go to Prashanthi Nilayam, we observe all the discipline and everything, but the school environment and the outside environment is so different. Nobody really, you know, resonates with all these kind of things that we learn here. And if we want to really, you know, practice all this, then we become the odd person out there, and it's so difficult. We can't really, you know, be the this, the student that, you know, the Balvikas teaches us to be, you know, it's very difficult to be, and, you know, I was just other day reading, there is this term which has now become part of Oxford Dictionary. It's called FOMO. Have you heard of it?
No, no.
So it's called the fear of missing out.
Oh, okay.
So now you have this tendency where, you know, it's a persuasive apprehension that, you know, somebody else like me is having some rewarding experience from which I am absent. So, and that's the reason why, you know, you always want to be connected and you always want to keep knowing what others are doing, and you want to do the things that others are doing, you know, that which social media also sort of makes you do. So what is your take, and after that we'll definitely hear what sir has to say, on how do we deal with this?
Actually, I have gone through this same thing, and let me tell you what I found out for myself, which is true for me, and it may or may not be true for others. Ultimately, it is our conviction in Swami. See, I remember earlier when I used to go home from vacations, I used to meet my old connections, you know. They used to tell me, you know, come, let's go here, let's go there, let's eat something. And I used to tell them, no, I don't want to do. And, you know, those type, I used to be a little hesitant to talk about Swami and openly, you know, tell them that, no, this is not what Swami expects. But over a period of time, what happened is, as I stayed here, I started feeling bad about it. Why am I not able to openly talk about Swami? It's not about going and sermonizing people.
Yes.
But it's about, I realized for myself, I am being very honest, I realized that the only reason for that was I was not convinced about Swami. Then came a time in my life where, as I used to go for my data collection, and as I gave this one example, there were several people who didn't know about Swami. And then at another organization where I went, you know, there also they asked me to talk about Swami. And there what happened was I was very tensed because I was thinking, how do I put Swami's message in a way in which people understand and, you know, not talk about Swami, but still, you know, somehow in a clandestine way, you know, put Swami's message and all that. And then somehow it just struck to me that, why am I doing this?
Mm.
I am here to talk about my experience and my conviction in Swami. If people believe it, they believe it. If they accept it, they accept it. I know this is what Swami has told, this is what is good for me, and this is what I am going to do. And you won't believe it. That day, instead of, you know, just generally as if, you know, we speak outside, I decided that I will speak as if Swami is there in my presence, physically.
Mm.
And I started with a Sanskrit shloka, which I always chant before when Swami Bhagwan was physically there. It's one of my favorite shlokas. It's from Vivek Chudamani.
Mm.
And I just spoke as if Swami was there.
Mm.
And to my surprise, I realized that I was unnecessarily perturbed that people will not listen about Swami, they will not accept Swami. In fact, people were so open to receiving Swami's message. They were so, you know, they were so open, they were so convinced about what Swami stands for. And I really, you know, that was a moment of introspection for me. That, you know, all this while I used to think, no, let me not talk so much about Swami. You know, let me just, you know, package in such a way that, you know, it is convenient for people. Let me not behave in ways where people come to know that I am Swami's student. This happened several years ago. But I think that was a watershed moment for me personally in my life. That was a time when I broke away from these inhibitions, which I feel are not right. It are not good for us.
Yes.
We have to be convinced that what Swami has said. Swami has said you should be afraid of speaking about adharma, not about dharma. You should be afraid of speaking about lies, untruth, not about Swami, not about God, not about values or whatever Swami has taught you. So I think that once that conviction comes in people, then I feel they will be in a better position to practice what Swami has said and, you know, stand on.
Yes.
Be convinced of themselves.
Yes.
And then they will see themselves that the way people respond is very different from what they actually expect.
Yeah, what, you know, you are apprehensive over certain things. What you think probably will not work to your advantage or something.
Correct.
Is actually your strength.
Exactly. But we don't understand that unless Swami puts you in that spot.
Yes.
And I think that spot is required for everybody to be in at some point in their time in their lives.
Yes. Wonderful. Sir, you would like to add to anything on this topic?
Yes. I'm afraid what you have said is relevant and all that. What Swami is supposed to be saying in the Vahini and which was, the words had been broadcast earlier and all that. That referred to talking about the teachings, knowing about the teachings. But that subject got left out. Instead, you are talking about certain things which is relevant, but not in this context. So we must first train ourselves in this business. Supposing Swami were not there, that is where all this earlier wisdom comes into the picture. What would he do? But your point is important, and I'll come to that. There is, supposing I know about Upanishads, I know about Bhagavad Gita and all that. There is a real life problem which was sort of mentioned by Bishu with respect to somebody.
Yes.
Some young person. And it is a question of time. In the 11th chapter, Arjuna asks, who are you really? And he says, I am time, Kala. So, in this context, I remember two statements. Actually, one appeared in the film Gone with the Wind. The heroine goes to the plantation, Seven Oaks. On one side, there is the boat, Seven Oaks. On the other side, time is the stuff life is made of. That means time waste is life waste. Today, we have been pushed into a corner by social forces, so that we don't have much time for ourselves. And it turns out that we have sort of given our own excuses to not make time available for anything, let alone this kind of thing. And thanks to the this self, now that is taking away our time. Who, did anybody tell you? Did the Upanishads talk about self or something like that? But we have come to make use of it and blame that thing.
Correct.
So I'm not going to find fault. And in that situation, if you live in that ambience, it becomes very difficult to talk about these things and all that. The only way you do is, instead of going and giving talks, first, do I know what is being talked? Do I know why it is important? Can I explain this to the people? That has a validity. Some years ago, when I was junketing, quote-unquote, I went to a certain country, and I was asked to speak in a very prestigious institution. I won't mention them. And they asked me what is the topic, and I said, this is it. It was sort of taking Swami to somewhere. And I arrived after a long journey of 10 hours or so. I had not eaten anything because what they serve in the plane is not fit even for donkeys or dogs. Anyway, that's all non-Western stuff. I had not bathed and all that. A person, a lady, wife of the host, came to the... She had diplomatic, this thing, credentials, so she could come right up to the place where I go through passport check. And my visa had expired. So she got me a 3-day extension. And then on the way she said, Uncle, your talk is not tomorrow. It is today. In 3 hours, 2.5 hours from now.
Oh.
I said, nobody told me. No, we sent in, what is that called, Google Hangout or, I don't know, Hang-In, whatever.
Hangout.
Nobody told me. Mm. This is the first time hearing. And second thing she said, you are not supposed to talk about Swami. That's all, 2 bombs. I think one was not enough. I said, okay. I said, I'll go and have a bath, shave, etc. Then she said, you must eat something. I said, make some upma. And give me some sheets of paper. That's all I said. So all my slides, etc., I kept aside. And I wrote down a few points. I don't know what I gave as the title. I started not by saying a word about Swami. I just kept on talking about Gandhiji and all that at some point, which is a very popular court to play everywhere, safe. And then, along the way, I talked about the atom bomb, the state of the country, and what we need, why we need peace, etc., etc. I mentioned Gandhi and partition. And I talked about education, importance of education. I say, by the way, I have been working with the Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, which is established by Sri Satya Sai Baba of India, and it's a free education. Why it is important? Heavens did not come down. He talked about his water projects. Heavens did not come down. And then it went on. Then they asked questions. They talked about friction between India and Pakistan. I said, look, there was partition in 1947. It was mass murder by people on both sides who had become mentally deranged. Blood flowed like rivers. But if today you go to India or Pakistan and ask an 18-year-old college student what is most important for them, they don't care a damn about what happened in partition. They want jobs. So both countries. So, if only the elders don't talk about the past and make a living out of it, we can have peace. They like all those things. Okay. So, I also said, these banks, World Bank, Asian Development Bank, they give loans. It's a top-down approach, bureaucratic approach. Nobody asks the people below, what is it that they want? You give them what they want. So, Sai Baba introduced bottom-up. The top-down and bottom-up go past each other. He made sure they meet each other, and I mentioned many examples and all that. They had laid out a lot of food there. Of course, part of it was vegetarian for my sake. They all ate and went. I just was hanging around, and an elderly gentleman came and met me. He was a Japanese. And he was quite old. And he was a senior man in that institution. He said, I liked your talk very much. I have lived through World War II. I have seen the effect of the atom bomb and what devastation causes. And he spent half an hour talking to me. So it is a question of not quoting the Upanishad, nothing, but wisdom in action. That is what it is. So the way I talked about Sai Baba in passing is, we can quote the scriptures. Devil is better than us in doing that. But what is the take-home lesson for me today? The real purpose of reference to the Upanishads and all that is, can I give some guideline to somebody? It happened to me just this morning. A certain gentleman, after experience in many places, came here. So he was put on the hold. He had not got his ID card and this and that. There was a lot of bureaucracy. So I told him, if you come here, you will be roasted alive. That is your okay. If you don't want that, no problem. You can go wherever you want. No, sir, this, that. I'm feeling upset, this, that. I said, nobody asked you. This is the way it is. I told him this all happened. No, for you I'll work on it. I said, I don't for me and all that. I asked for your help to the trust office. And I said, he will help me. I'm alone. I'm not able to run around to do so many things. I know technology. I'll go and solve those problems. But there is a lot of administrative navigation. This man has a lot of experience and all that. But it went into some labyrinth and it got lost there. So nothing is happening. I feel hurt. I've never been treated before. He said, it's all scraping your ego. No, sir, I'm not ego and all that. And I said, left it at that. Finally, I found out what was happening. So I arranged, tomorrow you go and meet that man. That man will give you an ID card or something. What I'm trying to say is, they imagine a world and they want that to happen. And that is not going to happen in this world. And therefore, how can I prepare them for that? That is the whole important thing. Now, therefore, whenever I read anything, I try to map it onto the real world. How do I explain it in terms of the real world? And that Swami has done in many places. So I must arm myself with that and go and talk to another person. And this becomes necessary because there are many people who trash Bhagavad Gita. For the simple reason Krishna talked about the Varna system. The Varna system should not be explained the way it is done in the Bhagavad Gita, in the sense he talks about Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Sudras. That is a literal translation. So when people come to me, I just don't talk about Krishna. I said, look, in all societies, there was stratification. Initially, that came because of aptitude. Some became hunters, some went into farming, some went into other activities and so on and so forth, carpentry and all. And then it became what I would call hereditary. Even in England, you have ironsmith,
yes,
the goldsmith. These are professional names.
Yes.
And that becomes the family name and so on. And they learnt at the feet of the father. And in India also it was the same. They made very good musical instruments. It was purely intuitive. They know what to do and all that. And the son will get thrashed, and by the time his father dies, he can take over. So this is the way their knowledge was passed from generation to generation. But in all these process, there is always an aberration that comes into the picture. Some fellows want monopoly. So in the case of the Hindu society, the Brahmins wanted monopoly.
Right.
And that is why Buddha came as an antidote. So you know all that history. It happens in every society.
Somebody becomes selfish. Some group.
It's not a question of selfish. Everybody is selfish. There is not a person who is without selfishness and self-interest. But the point is, he uses it to acquire power and control. It is the power. I don't care if X is selfish, but if he has the power to control me in every way, then that is dangerous. See, it comes through as tyrannical kings, tyrannical dictators, and even in a so-called democracy, it can happen.
Yes.
There is a judge named Brandeis. And since you did MBA, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
So you must listen to this. He wrote, he was a Supreme Court judge. A lot of things not right about him. But he did write one thing. Democracy and capitalism cannot exist, coexist. If you have capitalism, you cannot have democracy. If you have democracy, capitalism has no place. Today, in all the countries, we want to have both. And sure enough, there is a lot of exploitation and all that. And then the other thing about Swami's teaching, which is very unique, is, and there I will stop so that we can carry the discussion. You talked about talking ill of adharma. Somewhere along the line, I noted down, don't talk about adharma.
No, he said that, why should be afraid when you're talking only about dharma?
No. He said, don't talk about adharma.
No, I didn't say that, sir.
I noted it down,
sir,
immediately.
What I was saying was, I have read somewhere where Swami has told that you should be afraid of talking about adharma. You should not be afraid of talking about dharma.
Yeah.
That is what.
Why should you be afraid of talking about adharma?
No, meaning...
That's my question, okay.
Propagating adharma is a sin which you should refrain from.
When I talk about adharma, I am not propagating adharma.
Correct, sir.
You have to be very careful about your words.
Correct.
In fact, you have to talk about adharma and point out its deficiencies.
That is correct, sir.
And that is the more important thing.
Yes, sir.
So, I think we have to pay attention to the substantive part. And what I would call rider to that is, am I just a talker and what fraction of it do I observe? If, for example, I ask anybody to say, don't touch the cell phone for 3 days, they will say, I would rather die, jump into a well than do this. Okay, so there it is. So we have to contextualize contemporaneous and then remove the trappings of our social system.
Yes.
Because once you talk about injustice,
yes,
okay, fleecing, greed,
yes,
that doesn't have any color, no race, nothing. It is beyond all these things. That is where the fight starts. The mind of a black man is no different from the white of mind of a white man.
Right.
Because ultimately, it's at a conceptual level. So that is something we have to keep in mind. I'm sorry it took a long time, but then I got my share rather late.
Sir, one question I had.
Now we can ask short questions.
Yes. Sir, you talked about how we can map on the teachings of the Upanishad to contemporary issues, sir, and explain it in ways which are understandable in the context. Sir, can you share with all of us, sir, how one can go about developing that aptitude of reading the scriptures, reading Swami's teachings, and then trying to put them in the context for oneself and if needed for others?
Yeah, but that's a very long and patient struggle. I don't do it as a one-to-one. I read half a dozen things. I said, how does it refer to today's world? There is a famous story about, it concerns a professor in the London School of Economics. There was a problem with the price of fish, and fish was not selling. There was a dumping, and so else price of fish had gone down. So in England they buy fish and chips. So professor came and gave her a long lecture on economics, and the lady who was selling fish said, "But professor, what has that got to do with the price of fish?" That is a real problem.
Yes, sir.
So I have to learn how to take something and give it in a context to somebody. That comes from teaching. And I learned that for teaching, you must read a lot. And you must read 5 times more than what you have to teach. And there was one important sentence, statement made by Richard Feynman, genius. And I never forgot it. He said, "You ain't understood anything unless you can teach that to a first-year student." And he said, "There's only one thing I cannot teach to a first-year student, and that is electron spin, because it comes from relativity. They have not studied relativity." So when I really give a talk, I imagine what are all the questions they can ask me. That is one thing. So that is problem solving. Second thing is, I always ask me questions. And to encourage them, I say, there are no stupid questions, there are only stupid answers. When they ask questions, it opens my eyes and thinking. And you do get caught in such situations. If you want, I can give one example. I went to a place where they had made my book, Conversation Between God and Man, as a textbook for study circles. So I was told all the devotees here are going to discuss your book. So I was supposed to answer questions. So the man who was conducting discussion said, "Who wants to ask the first question?" So one lady put up her hand. And she said, "My question is this. If a man is very poor, his children are starving and are about to die, I don't think it's a crime if he goes and steals bread. What do you say?" Sir? I said, "Is it your view that it's not adharma or something else?" "No, that is my view." I said, "If it is your view, I cannot contest it. This is a free world. Anybody can say what they want. I can say this is right, you can say that's right. You can go on arguing till the cows come home, as the saying goes. However, if both of us agree that this law of dharma is not made by either you or me, but is ordained at a much higher level, then my job is to follow the rules and make sure I follow the rules properly. Your job also is to follow those rules properly. When we play a game, There are rules. We are supposed to follow rules. I mean, you are not supposed to cheat. These days, those things are also happening. But the principle is, there are rules laid down, and you follow them. In the legal system, the rules are laid down by the constitution and the laws of the land. Sometimes the laws of the land violate the constitution and the court strikes it down. So, moment you say there is a dharma that is not laid down by me and you, both of us have the same rules. If you accept that, I can answer your question. So, at least there was an understanding that. What rules are we playing by? There is a small incident which happened many, many years ago. Australia cricket team went to West Indies. On the way back, they decided to stop in New York for 2-3 days. And then they came to England and all that. At that time, Don Bradman was the captain of Australian team. So, he said, it is wonderful to be in New York. Nobody recognizes you. You can walk anywhere you go. And just to, for sake of some fun, they decided to have a cricket match. And most of the players were playing in America were from the West Indies. And a friendly match. This Bradman noticed some funny thing, something funny rather. Then he went to the umpire and said, the overs from one end seem to be longer than the overs over on the other end. He said, yes, that's true. He said, why? In Australia, you have 8 balls per over. In England, they have 6 balls per over. I don't know which rule you are playing. Those days, yes. It was 8 balls per over. The same way, how do I know what rules are? The rules of dharma are invariant in time and space. They are not changeable. They are eternal laws. So I hope that clarifies something.
So what is the answer you give, sir? After the other person agreed on the common rule, what is the answer you give, sir?
Okay. I said, if my job is to follow dharma, if dharma is equal to God for me, if I say I will not steal, at some point of time God will come to my rescue. And there is something which I heard from Swami himself on one day in Thrai. You want to hear that?
Yes, sir. Yes.
So, in Thrai, there was one military man. He was sitting there in uniform. It is against rules. You should not do that. Swami asked him to speak. He said, Swami, there is a lot of corruption, this, that, and all that. The bosses. Military, there is plenty of corruption. So, Swami said some things. And he kept on saying, Swami said, talk to your boss and all. He said, Swami, you don't understand the military. He kept on saying, Swami, if I go there, I can be court-martialed and all that. Then Swami salute, apologize, say, can I say, and all that. He kept on saying. Then I said, Swami, so what will happen? Swami, I'll be dismissed. So what's big deal about that? Swami, I'll be on the streets. I'll have no money. I don't know what to do. Nobody will give me a job. I've been dismissed from service. So what's the big deal? And then this man was rattled. Now he's coolly again. Then he said, you don't have faith in God. You come and sit here and tell your faith in God. God is dharma. If you have decided to sacrifice all that for the sake of dharma, do you think dharma will keep quiet? Dharma rakshati rakshaka. Somebody will come and give you a job. That is the job of dharma. So that, you don't have confidence.
Yes.
Okay, you don't get a job. The Puranas are full of those stories. We can have merrily share that story with anybody who is ready to listen. When you want to apply it, it is not so. And this is true of even what I call not people from here, elsewhere. There is a famous Harikatha exponent. He is no more. He was very famous. He was inviting everywhere. But then somebody complained, your terms are very elaborate and strict. He would ask for all sorts of things. 2 sets of silk dhotis, anangavastram, and a lot of cash, and some jewels for his wife, sari and all that. And they said, you talk like that, but you ask this. He said, that is different, this is different. Bluntly, he said. He was comes from the priestly. Tikshadars are very high in the Brahmin. In mathematics, this is called separation of variables. See, if you do that, then you detract the credibility of dharma. So, in my life, I must make sure I don't do anything that brings discredit to dharma. If I do bring discredit to the dharma, that means I'm bringing discredit to the name of Swami. Yes. That is the way I have to protect my barrier. So, you don't have to read umpteen things and quote from here and there. Yes. This is the whole thing.
Wonderful, I think. I mean, Aman gave a practical example of having that conviction. I think ultimately, it is you have to be convinced about what you are and what you believe.
The conviction of what I call the abstract principle translates into conviction about Swami, because Swami is a human representation of that. That is what it is.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be Swami. It could be Guru, Mother, Father, anything.
Exactly.
So, if you don't have anything else to say and you are wrapping up, can I have the last word?
Yeah, please, sir. We have some time because we started a bit late, so you can...
You do have, very good. Yeah. No, anyway, I'll stick it in and you can ask me some questions on this.
Yeah, sure.
So, I am putting my neck in the noose. This is a quote from a poem by T.S. Eliot, who became a very fan of India, and he translated the Bhagavad Gita and all. He's a poet, Irish poet, I think. And in one poetry he says, where is the life we have lost in living? Where is the wisdom we have lost in knowledge? And where is the knowledge we have lost in information? And today we have lost information in bits and bytes. And then he says, the cycle of heaven in 20th century, this was written last century, cycle of heaven in 20th centuries bring us further from God and nearer to dust. This is what we have to think about. We are talking about old wisdom and all that.
Yes.
That must be thought of in the context of going from the dust up this ladder. We have come down the ladder very fast. We have fallen down without any ladder. Now we have to go. But the same point is echoed in a song by the Beatles, in a very practical and hard-hitting way. They say, he's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he is going. He's as blind as he can be, just sees what he wants to see. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he is going. Isn't he a bit like you and me? In a way, this is a lampoon and the other is a cry of agony. So, that is what Swami once said, quoting Ramakrishna. You cry for so many people, your property, your share loss, market collapse, vagera, vagera. You cry over all these things. Have you shed one tear for dharma? That is the thing that I would like to say. Those people who are principled were always like that. Gandhiji said the same thing in British days. I am glad he didn't live to see this, and I am glad he is cremated, not burned after rolling in a grave. He said, public servant, the British government term for the government servant is public servant. Any time you spend 1 rupee, think of the poorest person you know and ask what good this will do. That is relevant in today's world. I see so many lavish marriages, this, that, and conferences where there nothing is done, people give the same speeches. So, why all this? And it becomes very delusional. I mean, you just say, I'm fed up, I'm sick, I don't want God, nothing. That should not come. That should not come. You say, this is right, I have nothing to do with it. This is the way world is. That's because of you and me. But what can I do? Can I make life better for someone else? That is the question.
Swami, in this last segment, as he's talking about education, he's saying how the current system of education is flawed. and it's not.
What do you understand by system of education?
Well, here, I mean, the way the education process is, I mean, we have Bhagavan.
You changed one word by what is the meaning of education process?
Okay. Now, if we see the education system here in our university, you have the cultivation of mind, body and the soul.
No, what do you mean by system?
By system, I mean the whole way of imparting education.
Mm.
What is being conveyed and how it is being conveyed.
I'm afraid I don't agree with you. Because at the end of the day, the system very quickly comes down to syllabus, course, exam and test. If you really want to know this, I'll talk about something which I heard in an American radio. An American teacher, school teacher, went to Japan on some program in a classroom. He was sitting in the last row. And it was about class, 7-year-olds were there. One boy was asked to go to the board and draw a cube. He drew something horrible. And the teacher said, that's a good first try. Let us see if we can improve it.
Mm.
She asked some boys, can you help him to improve it? He said something, it was slightly better. This went on 2 or 3 steps. This teacher from America was mad. So what's all this nonsense, waste of time? If I were in America, I would tell this fellow to go to hell, call the brightest student and do this. This didn't happen. They went on doing this. His BP was going up and up. And then came the climax when he learned what was happening. And the teacher says, see, our young student has done a very good job. Give him an applause. So he bows, they bow, everybody is happy. That is learning together. And then this fellow realized, this class is not for teaching person how to draw a cube. This class was for learning together by coming, sinking our differences, growing cooperatively because their nation believes in honor.
Yes.
Honor, dignity, national pride, and so on. When a whole nation does that, that is remarkable. So, essentially, what it means is, Japan has embraced all the best in India without calling it by any brand name. But we talk about it and we abandon it here. That is what is worrying me.
Sir, recently, one of my very close friend's son was to be put in the school. And, because we're talking about the education system and all that, something very worrying which he shared with me, he was not, of course, worried about it, was his fees for the first year, first standard class is going to be 4.5 lakh rupees a year, and it's going to progressively increase by 1 lakh rupees each year.
Is in a metro?
Yes, he's in Bombay.
Mm.
It's going to increase by 1 lakh rupees each year. And I was just wondering, by the time the student finishes his studies, he's going to end up spending, you don't know how much money if you count the interest and future value and all those things. Also, he told me my friend's nephew is in that same school, and he was telling me that he uses a calculator which he has to buy a new one every year, and that calculator costs him around 20,000 rupees. I don't know what that is, because when I did my engineering, we used FX991 for all 4 years, which costed 1,500 rupees at that time.
I had a slight rule with Sachi.
But what really worried me is that a student is growing up knowing that he's spending such a huge amount for
student
on his
doesn't know.
He will eventually will know, sir. By the time he finishes his education, naturally he will know.
Yes.
And
I'm
then
not too sure what the anyway goes.
No, but then once he finishes his education, what is his focus going to be?
Yes.
It is naturally not going to be on, how do I follow dharma? It is obviously going to be on, my father has spent a crore on education. And how do I recover all that money and, put it back into the bank or whatever?
But I'll ask you to turn the page and look at other side. Right here in Puttaparthi. This school cannot admit everybody. It has gone into a lottery system. In Sarama school also there are problems. A lot of people, the fellow who drives, he wants to give a better future, they go to small classes. But he cannot afford.
Yes, sir.
He gets a salary of 8,000 rupees per month. That's all. Period. Everything included. And then he has to spend 20,000 rupees on this. At the end of that, they come to school final. Where is the job? Everywhere it's like that. There are no jobs. There are no jobs for most of the things. It's happening in America. Either you do that job or do this job. Everybody flips burgers. How many people can do that? At least the previous government was giving food stamp. They say you go and earn. You can't earn. You are banned for many reasons. Discrimination is there. So we are caught up with social forces which we cannot control. We become victims of what you call. This is a kind of what you call tyranny. There is an economic system. It favors the rich and all that. There was a lot of... one day I heard a TV show, NDTV. I normally don't listen, just out of curiosity. Pranav Rai was running the show. And all the fellows were there. Somebody said, why don't we import food? Country of 1.3 billion, if it goes to import food, they'll kill you with the prices, food prices. At least if I grow here, nobody can say I have to import. But that Americans tried it with Japan, and there the national honor finally took over. They bought the food but didn't eat it. They kept it in corners. We'll eat only Japanese rice. That is national honor. So in the name of all this fair trade, all the capitalists get you by the throat. There's something even worse. This has nothing to do with money. In the old days radio, I used to listen regularly. There was a program called Spotlight. There was a very good journalist called Inder Malhotra, and he was talking to someone else who happened to be a doctor, pediatrician. You know, long before the child enters kindergarten, it goes to preschool. And before preschool, there's something like pre-preschool. Then the mother has to go for interview and all that. And a two-year-old child has to go through interview and all that. And his fellow said, I'm mad as hell. In a two-year-old child, the brain has not fully developed. This child is going to have a nervous breakdown before it has a nervous system. And he said it with great anger. What sort of a demonical society we have created in terms of competition? And in America, Korea, South Korea, the internet addiction grew because of that. No child wanted to go to school. They will tell mommy, I'm going to school. They will go to some parlor and play video games. Because in South Korea, there is a line. Either you are jump it or you don't. So if you are above that, you may go up in a big job in Samsung. Anithyam, but you can be asked to go any day. If you are below it, there are no jobs. Absolutely no job. So we have created something like this. But if you look at nature, there is an ecosystem. Everybody has a place. Snake has a place, frog has a place, tree has a place, monkey has a place. There is some what you call attrition and all that. But there is harmony in equilibrium. That's why Swami said nature is a great teacher. But we have thrown out nature. There is no nature. Wherever you go, there is only rubbish. Where is the nature? Our nature has become like rubbish as a result. So no, we don't have time to think. That's my worry. That's my deep worry. And this kind of stress, if you don't do this, you won't get a job. Should we be held to a ransom like that?
See, that's why Swami is saying that the whole education system has to undergo some change.
No, the point is, at the end of the thing, what is your object? I will produce a robot which will be hired by HDFC or something like that. So that becomes this thing. One thing where, at least in the old days, happened was that students who were near Swami, not all of them, when they went to certain places, they followed certain codes of conduct which made people impress people. But at the end of the day, many devotee companies hire our people. They will give them 1/4 the salary they will give to IIM Ahmedabad. Openly. That fellow comes and plays the market card. If you don't give me, I go to your company.
But I think that definitely...
These people come, Swami, this, that. Swami's boys are very good. But Swami's boys are worth only so much. Then what do you do? Somewhere we start wearing blinkers because it's convenient. That's all. That is a worrisome thing. Yeah. But that is why he says, if you say, I don't care what you give me, you have put me in this situation so that I work for you.
Yes.
Because you are the ultimate boss.
Yes.
That is what Krishna says.
Yes.
He is my servant, I say. I am his boss. He doesn't know that. Mm. But you just say, Haji, and you do my work. Yes. I will redeem you. Makes it very clear. Mat karma krit.
Yes.
Work for me. Mat paramo. Thinking only of me.
Yes.
And do it with devotion. Mat bhakta. That is jam on the cake.
Yes.
Icing on the cake.
Yes.
Then you will come to me. He has made it very clear. So the way he has personalized the abstract God, the difference between Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita is, Upanishads leaves you with an abstract God. And then I can enter into all sorts of debates about that abstract God, which is done in plenty. What metaphysics, Spinoza's God, Spinoza's grand God, and all those things. But if I look at Swami in terms of prema, not what we call love. Prema involves tyaga, sacrifice.
Yes.
Tyaga in eke amrutatma. So that is what I have to learn. What is it I am ready to sacrifice? So we have to go out asking what is it I am going to sacrifice?
Yes.
Is that okay with you?
Yeah, I think plenty to think and definitely...
I kept quiet so that I could talk a lot at the end.
There are a few other things on this paragraph. Probably we'll continue next time because time is running out. So, dear listeners, if you also have any questions, please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. This is the 13th chapter of Prema Vahini. So, please, if you have time, do open the pages of this beautiful treatise on Prema. And you might wonder, where is Prema? That's our job, to find out where is Prema. We'll ultimately know that where there is not, Prema is there all over. And it is the first Vahini that Swami has written. So please do take time out to read and contemplate and do share with us your comments and your inferences, your experiments in practicing these tenets written painstakingly by Swami. Thank you so much. We bring this session to an end, the day-long Thursday life, and offer this at His lotus feet for this beautiful chance for giving us this opportunity to ruminate on His teachings. Thank you so much. Sairam.